Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
This is episode number 37, being recorded on the 30th of July, 2014. Topic today is going to be a discussion on IoT and Azure with special guest Jeff Knuckles. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me today, I have Evan Basilik and our special guest. Evan, please introduce yourself and our guest.
Sure. My name's Evan Basilik, and I'm a support escalation engineer in the Windows group focusing on Windows Azure IaaS. Like Sujit said, we do have a special guest. So Jeff Knuckles is the VP of Cloud Practice at Aditi, and he's here to join us this week. And Jeff, I mean, I'd say, you know, if you could just go ahead and kind of give us a sense of, you know, what you do and what you focus on, and also answer my first question: what exactly is Cloud Practice?
Yeah, certainly. So, I head our Cloud Practice, as you suggested, as the VP for sales services, and we do have a small product services team within there as well, and our architecture team and delivery. So there's a lot of different touch points there, but we're kind of a smaller to medium sized company, so we're spread out across basically the U.S., U.K., and India.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for coming. We really appreciate it.
And I have a question for Jeff, too. So, Aditi, is that a consulting company, or where did it come from, Aditi?
Yeah, you bet. So we're about 20 years old. If you look back that way, we started as a product development company, largely a Microsoft shop. From the founder down to our CEO down to me and lots of other folks in between. But we do a lot of cloud implementation, cloud consulting services, as well as mobile, big data, and lots of user experience design, digital marketing type stuff.
Excellent. That's great.
Yeah, I would say you couldn't have been cloud for 20 years. That's just not possible. So
No. I came through about some large investments in 2010 and decided to go all in on cloud largely for the organization, which was a big transformation. And, it helps us, particularly with other organizations who are considering cloud, because we've been through it and kind of got the scars to prove it, so to speak, right?
Yeah, no, definitely.
And is Aditi like one of our goal partners or that kind of thing with Microsoft?
Yep. Yeah, we've been the Windows Azure Partner of the Year, at least runner-up for at least last 4 years. We also got a global NSI partner for Windows Azure as well.
Excellent.
Cool. Great.
That's great. So I hear you're taking a part in this conference that they're going to have, an Azure conference of sorts in Charlotte?
That's correct. So we're going to be doing a boot camp, if you will, workshop there in Charlotte, North Carolina for Windows Azure. So I'll be kicking that off with a little bit of keynote. I'll keep it short, but I'll, you know, hopefully tee up some of the things that we'll cover for the day. I'll probably focus more on some of the intelligent system services and machine learning capabilities within Azure, because also within Aditi, one of my areas of focus is around the Internet of Things. It's an area of passion, interest, and profession for me. So it's great. It's a perfect marriage.
That's amazing.
So what do you get now? So is the IoT stuff, is that just a focus for you? Or, I mean, what are you guys doing in that space?
Yeah, it's a focus of a couple of things, right? So, you know, we've been doing some things, some customer-driven scenarios and solutions have been leveraging Azure as a backend. This predates, obviously, a lot of things that are in beta today, or at least the private the betas that are with intelligent system services in Azure.
Right.
But everything from just connected devices, command and control, PLC type stuff. We also have just recently participated in a merger with Symphony Telica, which does a tremendous amount of mobile embedded development, and you know, BI analytical type stuff for various manufacturing, automotive, and healthcare industries. So this is an area that we've been incubating on our own, leveraging cloud largely from the backbone and doing cloud gateways and things like that. So the marriage between us and Symphony Telica has only exasperated our interest in moving this to a collective offering from Symphony Telica and Aditi.
Yeah, that it's for me, you know, personally, because I actually started out in traditional engineering, and you know, back in my world, like when we talked, you know, things and data of things that we were actually talking about, you know, measurements on a line, right, on a production line, and massive numbers of measurements, right, similar scale to what we're seeing with the Internet of Things today, but you were very limited because everything really, if you were lucky, there was a PLC attached to it.
Right,
that you could pull this data in. And I remember us dealing with some of the same challenges of massive amounts of data. We didn't have near the computing and the cloud capabilities that we have today. Are you seeing the traditional, I mean, obviously there's a lot of new things coming in the IoT space, like, you know, all these, you know, wearables and, you know, medical devices and all that. But are you seeing the traditional, you know, manufacturing world coming along in that as well?
Yeah, they definitely are. I mean, when you look at the in-vehicle systems, the telematics for the manufacturing industry, communicating, you know, information from sensor data, everything from, you know, the logistics, trucks, you know, parts and sensors to keep those things going and do some corrective action to prevent maintenance problems, to you know, controlling or accessing your home to vehicles, or to even some things that we don't really think about, like even in the healthcare industry, such as they have a, you know, intense auditing process, you know, to ensure high standards of quality and cleanliness and that kind of thing. And there's even sensors to suggest that you actually did wash your hands so many times a day, or before you enter a room and that kind of thing. So
really,
yeah, it's really spanning the gamut across. It's pretty much a horizontal need, and the ever increasing demand for insights into all of this data that's being acquired is really becoming a great opportunity.
You know, and it didn't even occur to me, and this is probably in some ways really the mainstreaming of IoT, is this morning my wife and I were sitting, I don't know, she was reading, you know, just going through USA Today and whatnot, and she called me over to look at this article that I had about, I forget what the device name was, but it was something where kids could wear two styles. They could wear one on their ankle. This was for to prevent drowning. But it was a device that if non-swimmers could wear in their ankles, so if it got wet at all, it would set off this alarm via Bluetooth to, you know, speakers or to your phone. And if they were swimmers, it was measuring how long you'd been underwater, right? Mm-hmm. So if it was, you know, you've been underwater for a minute and a half, okay, that's probably not good, and it would throw the alarm. And I didn't even think about it until we were just talking about it. That's IoT, right?
It very much is, yep. In fact, along a similar line of thinking about security and concern for family members, you know, you know, one of the hobbyist projects that I was even working on recently was using something called a pulse oximeter, which is just a sensor that regulates pulse and oxygen in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father's had, you know, series of heart, you know, condition issues and heart attacks. And so I felt, why not actually put something out there and ask him to take a reading every now and again so that I can just kind of monitor that even with myself. But it provides, you know, proactive alerts and gives him real-time feedback as to where it's at without having to go into a doctor to get more invasive blood tests, right? Just simply put your finger in and get an infrared, you know, light signal just to kind of read the pulse.
So okay, I got to ask then, are you geek enough that you went and coded it yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
it's a fun world. You know, I kind of managing an architecture team and sales services, It's an area where I get to kind of, you know, harness the best of all of these areas that we have in the company. And it's often inspiring, but I can't break away from my geekiness when it gets down into doing some of the development of this stuff. Now, professionally, they would never want to put my hands on anything. But to convey a concept, I do quite well.
That's cool. Yeah. So how did you actually, you know, drill into that? Because I think that's what, you know, to me, when I, you know, even when I talk to people just off the street about some of this stuff, you know, their interest in how they actually did it. So how, you know, what did you use to code it? What Azure, I mean, and this is contextually to this conversation, but,
sure,
you know, or this podcast, but what Azure feature did you, I mean, give us a sense of how you actually architected it.
Yeah, you bet. So in this particular case, I use the .NET Micro Framework as the programming language as a C#. It's very common for anybody who's a Microsoft developer. I used Visual Studio as the IDE for programming this. Again, very comfortable for the average professional developer. And in this case, I used GHI Electronics creates the Gadgeteer boards, or various types of boards, I should say. And one was called the Fez Spider board. And in that case, it made it really easy for me to be able to not have to take a soldering iron out and have to pull things in, but it's much more like a breadboard.
Like a breadboard, yeah, okay.
Just plug in some sensors and you wire up a few classes and you're able to get from, theory to concept to a workable solution in very, very little time. So I've created several different home automation scenarios. I'm a home brewer also, so you can imagine there's a lot of things there that can be done using these type of technologies. But I've also been there's a variety of other things out there as well. I mean, there's the Raspberry Pis and the BeagleBones and there's Intel has actually embraced this idea of putting some things out there as well with their Intel Galileo. In fact, they're working with Microsoft right now for a Windows on chip type solution.
Saw something about that.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's pretty cool.
Ryan, our previous guest talking about IoT, Ryan Berry, I want to say he used Raspberry Pi, but he basically used the .NET Micro Framework as well, right?
Correct.
If I'm researching right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I know Ryan Berry well. So he's on the Premier team there at Microsoft?
Yep.
Yeah, so I just actually saw him for dinner the other night. We live pretty close to each other. Yeah, so we tend to geek out on these things quite a bit.
That's funny.
Yeah, small world. It's a small world after all. Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan. Usually the relationship. I talk to Ryan a good bit but usually the relationship is a little bit not between us specifically, but it's much more he's reaching out to me because some customer's unhappy about something that's going on in the Azure space. The standard statement I make is, nobody ever, I just, one of these days I want it, but in my entire history in support, nobody has ever called and said, that product, whatever one I'm supporting at the time, it's just great.
We haven't had any problems with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my relationship with Ryan. We get along great, but he never brings me good news. I mean, it's just never, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, it's great, and when you start, communicating with those in the field who are doing some of this stuff today, you find a lot of, there's a lot of class libraries and various things out there, free code for you to download and able to implement, Azure-based solutions right away. So, I mean, I'm getting classes off of GitHub and various other scenarios and examples that I found online to be able to pull a lot of these assets together.
Yeah.
But I'm using table storage. I actually created just a Windows Azure mobile service, to quickly spin something up, and I use a JSON feed pushback to Azure Mobile Services to capture that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's Jeff, cool. Real quick, how long did you take from getting it into an idea in your head to having something that worked? How many days, weeks, et cetera, did it take for you in your part time?
For the actual time or duration, it probably took me a couple of days to pull it together. And that really means that it's after I get the kids to bed and I can actually find time to work on it. So, it's that 2 to 3 hour window I get before my eyes are bleeding. But literally a couple hours here and a few hours there, I was able to pull together a full end-to-end solution to really push data out to the cloud and be able to also bring it back and do some kind of analytics on it, right? It's small scale, for the things that I'm doing, but it's concept, right? And some of the things you want to do more professionally, you can take this concept to more real world architecture, over a period of time that wouldn't be as long as well. The first thought is really just, it's up to your imagination, what you can come up with and what you can create, which is really taps into the creative side, and it really is limitless. I mean, increasingly the processors on some of these small boards are just getting faster and faster. You got full on operating systems for which you can actually program against. It's a great new world. And with Azure being in the maturity model that's at today, really is a perfect backbone for us to be able to do this at scale professionally. And that's where we're working with some of our customers, on building out real world solutions using their own pre-existing hardware solutions that they had in place.
So that, you mean their actual devices that are sitting out there, you know, wherever at that point when you say they're on hardware.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, yep, that's exactly right. You know, yeah. And that's kind of it's an interesting point. I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, some of these in the manufacturing industry, you know, they've got hardware and controllers and visualizers and things like that that have been on the shop floors for 20, 30 years, and they don't change out very often.
Yeah.
And you know, the beauty is they want to be able to take advantage of tapping into new markets and getting the kind of scale and performance that that they're seeing that's promised of cloud and being able to do some of this data to information to insight type scenarios that's being promised through things like HD Insights and also machine learning as it's coming on board. But it's easy to be able to bolt onto those existing you know, hardware solutions that they have and start writing that data out to the cloud.
Yeah, and I think that's actually something, you know, Sajid, we were talking this, I think you and Kale talked about this the week that one of the weeks I missed was, you know, and the technologies, you know, Jeff, that you're using to your solution are the same exact ones on the back end that this enterprise customer is using and this medium-sized business is using. I mean, it really, I think for me, the thing that I like about cloud is really it democratizes a lot of this stuff, right? Think about the effort it would take to set up an edge web server and have the authentication work and, you know, oh my God, if your solution actually gets popular or something, right, then you got to buy all this other hardware. And in Azure, this is just available to everybody.
Yeah, right. This is perfect. We did an episode on the event hubs a couple of weeks ago, I think. And Jeff, what do you think about that? Have you played around with event hubs?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I mean, my team has certainly been entrenched in it. I've been dabbling a bit with it myself. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that are promising there within the service bus arena on Azure as well. So it's just ever growing. In fact, it's so fast paced now that we pretty much dedicated somebody to make sure that they're educating folks across the company exactly on what's new and what's coming. The maturity model is great. You know, you're not waiting 2 years for, you know, major releases to actually change what you do. You know, you're able to, you know, tackle things tomorrow that weren't available yet today. It's very promising.
So just going back to your work on IoT then, I think what I read recently is that one of the things that's driving the whole move to IoT is that the fact that the cost of these processors that are being embedded in these devices, they've come down to, I think they're cents or dollars. I mean, they're very cheap now, right, if you buy them in bulk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't buy too many of them in bulk myself, but, I mean, even the ones that I'm buying are less, you know, they're sub 30
yeah,
bucks.
Yeah, but know? The manufacturers now can, it doesn't cost them a whole lot to bolt on some of the stuff into their devices, I suppose.
Exactly. I mean, so a lot of the things that they're going to be bolting on are some, or either like, you know, small, lightweight, inexpensive, but yet reliable gateways, right? Mm-hmm. So there's basically a few building blocks for which to ensure a cloud-based solution for IoT works, right? You first have to have that connectivity. A lot of these things can happen with some of like these 20, 30 years old systems, basically just extending them with a locally based gateway, or even having it write directly to the cloud. And in fact, it's enabled to do so, but connectivity is number one. Mm-hmm. You know, having identity and security associated with that connectivity to ensure that you can understand, you know, what the device is and how it's being secured so it can't become compromised. And then, of course, data storage and analytics, all of which obviously is in the cloud today and in Azure. And then command and control. You know, it's not enough just to be able to collect data and to be able to store that and do analytics on it within Azure, but it's also about, you know, pushing back command and control back down to these devices and having them do some corrective action. And that's kind of the secret sauce that I'm seeing a lot of the professional services organizations picking up on.
It's a two-way transfer. That's the key to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Great. And I think there's a bunch of things that Azure's coming out with. As you mentioned, they're in preview, and they'll be. And we've talked about some of them in some of our previous episodes. But in terms of just, are there any big gaping holes that are left to be filled now to allow companies to proceed with full blown solutions in the IoT space? Is there anything that big that's missing at this point that still needs to be fulfilled, maybe by companies like ADT or others?
Yeah, there certainly is, you know, and we're working with some of them today even is you look at some of these, like I mentioned, even in manufacturing, automotive, and healthcare in particularly, a lot of the devices that they've had in the industry for a long time that have been through the vetting process, tested, very reliable, not going to change very quickly, still have a bit of an archaic user experience, right? These are things that are consistently looking to enhance. And these things, you know, maybe leveraging a little bit more modern day, UX design capabilities with maybe HTML5 or something of that nature, as an example, instead of maybe using Qt or something like that they might be already using today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, but the corrective action, again, I kind of go back to that. What is the secret sauce, right? You know, Azure provides a lot of the back-end infrastructure. It's the core enabler to make IoT a reality for these guys at scale and to tap into new markets and new industries globally where they're maybe only doing it locally today. But the secret sauce of being able to provide corrective action and be able to tie all these things together is where professional service organizations like Aditi is really stepping in and helping out.
Well, because really isn't that, I mean, in some ways the magic of the, like, if I'm a healthcare company, right, I'm using mm-hmm. some device, all I really know is about my use and my experience. When you now have this two-way connected thing, there's the possibility for the manufacturer or the professional services company to come in and say, hey, we're getting data from all these different devices and here's an optimization that somebody else figured out that we can now push down to your or machine learning type things, right? That can then get pushed out to the entire customer base instead of just that, you know, one customer that's using. And historically, right, the manufacturer wouldn't even have known that the customer was doing that. And now they're not only able to know what they're doing, but then refine and push back out to their other devices that way.
Yeah. I mean, just to give you a real-world example in the agriculture industry, you know, that's something we don't necessarily think about, that farmers are embracing this technology to do, provide, you know, year-over-year consistent harvests. As an example, we worked with one in the West Coast we first sent out a lot of our researchers to identify what types of, devices that they were using already today that they were comfortable with broadly. But we also did soil samples. We went out and collected U.S. agriculture information, weather data, as well as, geospatial data, and then identified which seeds that they were using and how they were going about actually planting seeds and planting their harvests, on their crops. Providing all of this information, things that they didn't even think about, converging these things to the cloud and doing some analytics from a mobile device, you know, they're largely out there going and being able to target specific areas for fertilization and for seed, whereas before it was just spreading it all over. Now, you can imagine the savings just in that alone, but being able to create a consistent harvest based on the soil samples and knowing exactly where things need to go by looking at their device and having it take them directly to certain spots that require more or less fertilization and seed was a perfect win for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds really all over the place now.
I mean, that really sounds like you. So not only are you spending less for your materials, right? Your fertilizer and water and all that stuff, but because you're optimizing where you're putting it, you're actually getting more crop out. That seems like one of those mythical, you know, spend less to make more type things, right? But
right.
It sounds like it really would end up doing that.
It does, you know, and to also borrow another well overused term, it's smart farming, right?
But
it legitimately is, yeah.
Yeah. No, cool. No, that's awesome. I will have to echo and so I don't know if this manifests as much on your side because you're more about kind of design solutions for what customers want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of echo Jeff's comment about, you know, having to dedicate somebody just to keep up with what's going on. I would probably say that I average once a week where one of the engineers on my team comes and says, hey, Evan, you're a lead. You know, what is this? I have no idea. Oh, wow, we released that last week. I didn't even catch that, right? So it's the pace is incredibly fast.
And it's even worse when your customer tells you that, you know.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Well, you know, another thing that's interesting, too, and we're finding this obviously as part of our organization that we have, you know, embedded hardware developers and analytic folks and the software development and architecture teams are really you know, coming together and providing solutions, whereas they kind of worked in their own islands, so to speak, in the past. You know, I've seen this even at Microsoft, right? You know, you have a lot of the embedded team working very directly hand-in-hand with the Azure team now and on the software side. So this is true for the customers, and this is actually one of the things that we're finding. You mentioned about, you know, gaps and challenges, is they're finding this transformation within their own organizations, and they're also looking for professional services organizations and consultants to come in and help them navigate the waters.
Now, Jeff, are you seeing that you need to build up special skill for a programmer that needs to do this kind of, you know, microprogramming, or are general purpose .NET skills transferable here?
You know, it depends on the given the customer situation. You know, and somewhat, and even in the industry, right? I'll give you an example. When I look at manufacturing and automotive, you know, they already have a very well entrenched platform for which they're doing development, right? Mm-hmm. And they may have, you know, controllers and visualizers that are using various different types of programming practices and platforms to do that. That aren't necessarily .NET based. You know, this is old school shop floor type stuff. Then on the other side of the coin, though, when we look at industries that are maybe doing, you know, more new and innovative things, particularly like in healthcare, or that are creating new devices, they don't necessarily have 30-year-old devices laying around. Or in retail, absolutely. I mean, it's more of the mobile experience and using, you know, low emission communication protocols like Bluetooth and being able to take advantage of RFID tags and stuff like that, to be able to provide, you know, more rich in-store, experiences for the customers and direct them towards specific sales within the actual store itself. So yeah, and that's another actual scenario that we're working on as well. But these things, really, I would think you have to kind of look at them by the industry to find out, you know, how easily the skill sets were transcended. It's all based on what they already have and what they're looking to do with it. But for a lot of these things that I'm doing today and working on, .NET works extremely well.
Yeah, it certainly brings a lot of power. So the question I had for you, Jeff, and this is kind of always an interesting one to ask somebody externally. I mean, I know you were saying that you guys are mostly a Microsoft shop. But if, you know, and if you talk to a broad range of customers, right, there definitely is awareness, and I'll give Amazon credit. They have a nice product, mm-hmm. right? And there are some areas that we're playing catch up to them. You know, really two questions. So one, do you guys work with those as well, and just kind of compare and contrast, what do you think the differences are? And then the second question is, like, when you guys talk to customers, do you get, you know, hey, why aren't you on Amazon? And how do you guys answer those questions?
Yeah, no, great question. In fact, yes, we do some stuff with Amazon as well. In fact, we did stuff with Amazon before we started with Azure, for obvious reasons, right? They preceded it.
Yeah, we just didn't have anything.
Right, exactly. But in large part, the reason why we embraced Azure is because it had a broader suite of services that we could actually leverage and ensure a successful result for the customer. So, and I'm speaking more around what people refer to as the PaaS space, but cloud services, right? And the mobile services stack and all these other building block services that are within the Azure environment. Now, you know, the thing with intelligent system services is fantastic. Machine learning, very innovative. It's driving the market in many ways. And we're looking very forward to getting our hands dirty with that. I am also seeing Amazon start to pick up in this space as well. I mean, they're starting to staff up pretty clearly to attach the mobile connected device industry.
Yep.
You know, however they call it, it's IoT for them as well.
Yep.
They just don't have the richness of the, in my opinion, for what we've been doing and what we've been working on, the same, parity for which Azure does when it comes to cloud services stack.
Yeah, no, I would actually tend to agree. I mean, I started in the PaaS world actually with Azure SQL Database, that was all we had. Right, for a long time, versus Amazon, if you look at them, right, they started in IaaS and have started to come back and, you know, in hindsight, it looks like we made a, you know, PaaS is the future. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, nobody wants to stand up a full VM if you don't have to.
Right.
But the concept of lift and shift, just take your on-premises workload and move it to an IaaS VM, is incredibly powerful and appealing to people. Because for PaaS, it's great for greenfield development, and it's great if you're just, you know, you're a startup or whatever, but like some entrenched existing business, that's a harder move than than I think anybody expected.
And I think that blends well with what Jeff just said, which is a lot of the new development in the IoT space.
Yeah.
You know, I think for them it's a no-brainer to put it on PaaS. It's very cost-effective. The performance is great, and you get that, you know, reliability and infinite scalability. I mean, obviously you need to worry about that, right? You never know how many devices are going to be hitting your service and vice versa. So I think the PaaS model really works well for this.
Yeah, no, agreed. But it definitely takes some other thinking, right? Because you can't, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways there's analogs, right? I mean, websites, you know, match to web roles, and IIS matches to web roles. But there's, you know, you can't just copy your code over now. Actually, and I know this from some of my colleagues that are on the Windows Azure websites side, which is a direct analog from IIS. I mean, it is literally just push your project over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of our fastest growing areas, right? Because there is very little lift at that point, right? It really is mostly a straight shift. But IIS is seeing tremendous growth as well at that point. So.
Yep. And, you know, and we do a ton of it, right? I mean, we've probably done over almost 300 enterprise implementations on the Azure platform to date. And a lot of this is actually in both arenas, but we're never really seeing anybody just adopt one strategy. It's,
right.
it's almost always hybrid, not just hybrid to like their on-prem to the public cloud environment within Azure, but within PaaS and IaaS, right? I hate to kind of separate the two because quite honestly, and I think this is true of just the entire roadmap, there's parity between the two and increasingly so. And we're just seeing some more things roll out with monitoring as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how we monitor PaaS and, you know, services. We're starting to see the same thing even with the, you know, the VMs. So yeah, it's just every day that we go out there and we take a look at the scenarios and workloads for which they're deploying. We see very, you know, very, various trends, I guess you would say. You know, dev test, disaster recovery. And ultimately, when we start to do things in the PaaS environment, we call it internally at Aditi, you know, systems of engagement. That's where we tend to excel with our customers, right? Is around that notion, which is largely around just, you know, creating new mobile competitive differentiation scenarios, customer experiences, et cetera.
Yeah, no, great.
Hey, Jeff, you know, as we start to wrap up, I just wanted to kind of ask you one topic that's kind of important for me when we talk about IoT. So when we talk about being able to command and control devices, right, the security of these devices is something that always pops up in my discussions. So how are you, you know, is there some general strategy that you guys are adopting, or are there any trends in that area where you can make sure that only you are the person that is controlling that device and nobody else? Because, you know, that's a scary thought, right? That sensors all over your home are being hacked by somebody driving down the street or something like that.
Yeah, you know, and I wish I could say that we have a, you know, a specific secret sauce solution that works across the board every time, right? And unfortunately, what we're finding is that depending on the industry and the types of devices that are being used, it varies. So it could be something as simple as passing, you know, security and identity information through a header, right? Or it could be a certificate that's embedded on the actual device itself that's a means for which we can identify it. And sometimes they just simply enumerate them based upon some type of, I would say like a MAC identifier or some kind of GUID that they have that's attached to the particular device.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so far we haven't actually been able to, you know, pin down one particular scenario that seems to fit all. Although, you know, since there is such a proliferation of so many different devices out there.
There you go.
Let's keep it simple, right? You know, I'm actually looking forward to seeing these capabilities in the intelligent system services within Azure, because around connectivity and configuration of multiple different devices is one of the things that at least I'm seeing and reading that it's going to do very well for us. Provide some consistency in that connectivity space.
Yeah, I wonder, and this is just off the top of my head, I have absolutely no idea how you would do this, but I wonder if at some point we might see some integration with these devices and Azure Active Directory, right? Some way of authenticating them, you know, somehow, because we are... You know, I think we are moving in the direction of adding more and more ability to represent things that are not just people,
yep,
right, in that system. And I can certainly see some way at some point to associate a device to, you know, an identity, and boom, there's your auth, there's everything.
We've been kind of doing that with if we create, you know, certain unified authentication modules for certain customers that actually use the Windows identification framework, identity framework in .NET 4.5. It works out really well because you can have headless devices authenticating, you have users authenticating. And it's very modular. You can actually break that out for multiple different devices and however they authenticate. Configure.
I'd love to see over time like those features actually start to get pulled into the devices themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So that you don't have to layer this code on top.
Hey, this has been a really, really great discussion. Thank you so much, Jeff, for taking the time. I know you're a super busy person, and I'm sure you're also getting ready for your for the boot camp. Wish you all the best for that at the keynote. And thank you very much for joining us today. And Evan, as always, thanks for bringing Jeff on board and for all your insights.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you very much. And just to remind everybody, it is September 6th, right? No, yeah, Saturday, September 6th is the boot camp here in Charlotte. So if anybody listening is in the vicinity or knows somebody in the vicinity, please come out. We'd love to have you.
Fantastic. Thank you, gentlemen. I really do appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.